We're in 1 Chronicles 29. We did take our reading from Exodus 36, but we're returning again to 1 Chronicles 29. Our text is the words of that fifth verse. The gold for things of gold, and the silver for things of silver, and for all manner of work to be made by the hands of artificers. And who then is willing to consecrate his service this day unto the Lord? Those words at the end of the verse, who then is willing to consecrate his service this day unto the Lord? We're thinking about giving to a building fund. We did set out a few weeks ago the picture, the vision that we have for the future with regard to the building, especially of a church hall, and all the benefits that would be to us. And a couple of weeks ago, we looked at this portion, taking up the matter of a building fund. And we saw that giving to a building fund was nothing new. It wasn't a modern idea. It happened in Bible times, and we have a great example of it here, and even where we read from this morning in Exodus 36, which remembers much further back in the history of God's people. We're thinking especially of the question, how to give to a building fund. What should our response as the work carries on, as the appeal is made, and there is that building fund, the need of finance for the work? The question is how. How should we as God's people give to that building fund? We did think just of the one point the last time, taken from the third verse, it's the fact that we should give personally. David said, I have set mine affection to the house of my God. I have of mine own proper good of gold and silver and so on. There's a need to give to God's work personally. I want to think of some other truths that can be drawn from the chapter this morning. If we could emphasize to you in the second place, we ought to give to a building fund abundantly. If you look there at the very end of verse 2, it says, in all manner of precious stones and marble stones, and notice the final word, it says, in abundance. So I want you to see that the offering wasn't small. The offering that these people made for the building of the temple, it wasn't an insignificant offering. If you go a little further down the chapter, to verse 16, David says, O Lord our God, all this store that we have prepared to build thee an house for thine holy name. The word store. And remember that word, the word store, is often used of giving in the Bible. Think of Malachi. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse. Gives you some idea of the giving that is to be made. It's to be held in a storehouse. Think of well of what Paul said. Let every one of you lay by him in store. Now, if you think of a store, the farmers, the businessmen, particularly will be able to identify with that. A store is something that holds a large quantity. It holds a very large supply. And that's the idea. That's the picture the Lord wants us to see here of the giving of these people. They gave abundantly. Back in chapter 22, David gives some of the details of the giving. He said that they gave then 100,000 talents of gold. Now remember, there is a little variation as to what a talent actually is, but it could be somewhere in the region of 100 weight. So 100,000 talents, that's about 5,000 tons of gold. It says in that same passage, they gave 1,000,000 talents of silver. The way it's worded in the authorized version is 1,000,000. 1,000,000 talents of silver. 50,000 tons of silver was given at that particular time. So I want you to see, brethren and sisters, that David and those that were with him at that particular time, they actually gave liberally, very liberally, very abundantly to God's work. From the details before you here, chapter 29, I know some of you were down at the Bible exhibition that the brethren ran in the City Hotel a couple of weeks ago. Roberta and I went down one afternoon. An interesting little story. We were talking to Sam Mays. Sam would be the father of Martin that sells the carpet. Sam and his wife have been missionaries in the West Indies for about 40 years. We had a very, very interesting chat with them. He told us a story about Dr. Paisley's mother. She had been living for a time before she was married over in Lurgan. She was staying there with the family of a brethren man called Dr. Darling. And she went along with the family one night to the brethren prayer meeting. And there was a wee bit of a lull in the prayer time. There was a long space. And Mrs. Paisley, not to be deterred by the fact that she was in a brethren prayer meeting, started to pray publicly in the meeting. Nobody rebuked her or asked her to be quiet, but it was said afterwards that put an end to any more lulls or any more spaces in the prayer time. All the men immediately started to pray without any hindrance or restriction whatsoever. But what I wanted to tell you about, they had a little model of the temple, and they had a little sheet that gave the details as equated here. And this is how they calculated it from 1 Chronicles 29. They said there was 270 tons of gold, 575 tons of silver, 610 tons of bronze, and 3,400 tons of iron. If sold on the market today, the 570 tons of silver would go for about $755 million US. The 270 tons of gold would be worth an astounding $15.3 billion American dollars. Those were the details they had at the Bible exhibition just a couple of weeks ago. So I want you to see, brethren and sisters, take the time to read the chapter yourself and ponder the figures that are given. But however you calculate them, and as I've said, there is, even when you read the Bible dictionaries and you want to try and bring it into modern terms, there is a little bit of variation in what they say a talent and so on equates to. But the reality is they gave liberally to the building project. If you think of the words there in verse 5 about consecrate, the verse says, who then is willing to consecrate his service this day unto the Lord? That's a very interesting word. It has the idea of hands full. If you have a Bible with a margin, you'll be able to see that and check that for yourself. But the idea, brethren and sisters, is that they came with their hands full, that they brought their gifts, they brought their offerings for this building project in handfuls to the work of God. They gave abundantly. Dr. Paisley, when he came to Wales, we had a great time with him at the end of August 1994, the opening of the little Buryport building. There's many stories we could tell you about the 6 or 7 days that he spent. We have great memories of that visit. But what I want to emphasize especially, on the day of the opening, the little building was packed out, folks standing out in the street. There was tea across in what was known in Buryport in the Memorial Hall afterwards. And then he preached in the Bryn Work that night. It was in preparation for receiving in that work. But he said that day, whatever the offering would be, that he personally would give the same amount to the building fund. £1,020, our little congregation and those supporters that were gathered that day, that's what the offering came to. And he personally gave a check for £1,020. £2,040 then, that made the offering. General Gordon, very famous British Army officer, great Christian gentleman. At Calvary, in the will of God, when we go to Israel, at the end of June, beginning of July, we'll be able to visit Golgotha. It's sometimes known as Gordon's Calvary, because it was when General Gordon was stationed in what was then known as Palestine that they rediscovered Golgotha, the place of the skull. But one of the awards that General Gordon was given was a gold medal. He had been to Africa. He had served in China as well. There's 33 great victories in particular that he won in China. And as a mark of that, the British government wanted to honour him. They wanted to give him a large financial gift. He refused it. They wanted to give him titles, and he refused those as well. He agreed to take a gold medal and the words inscribed on it of what he had achieved out in China. But after General Gordon died, the family could not find the gold medal. He was one of those men that kept a diary, and they looked back through the diary for any record of this gold medal. And you know what he had done with it? There had been a time of famine, a food shortage in Britain during his lifetime. And he sent that gold medal to Manchester, and he wanted it to be melted down and sold so that the money that would be raised from it could go towards the feeding of the poor, the feeding of those in need. And in his diary, at the time that he did that, he recorded these words: "The last earthly thing that I had in this world that I valued, I have given to the Lord Jesus Christ." Those are examples, thinking of General Gordon, Dr. Paisley. They're examples of men that gave generously, men that gave liberally. You think of what we read about the tabernacle today. Remember, they had to stop them. That's one of the outstanding, even one of the remarkable facts that's recorded in that chapter. There had to be an announcement made by Moses throughout the camp of Israel to stop the children of Israel from bringing any more gifts. Remember, some of the ladies had been making cloths and items and all to help with the making of the tabernacle. The words of the chapter actually record this: the people were restrained from bringing. Now, can I ask you, do you know any church, do you know any congregation, any denomination where the people give so abundantly, give so liberally? An announcement has to be made and the people restrained from bringing. What generosity of God's people. And remember, it was for the making of the tabernacle, the building of what was the place to worship at that particular time. In the New Testament, it says that they gave beyond their power. That was what Paul wrote to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 8. And he spoke about those people. He talked about their deep poverty. They weren't wealthy people. They didn't have a lot of money. The passage as well records, as well as their poverty, they were in a great trial of affliction, passing through difficult times, being persecuted for their faith. But despite those things, men and women, they gave. And they gave generously to the work of God. Those words, beyond their power, they actually mean that they gave sacrificially. Their giving was something that cost them. It was more than they could afford to do. It was actually more than they could afford to give. But that didn't hold them back. That didn't stop them from giving it anyway. Did you ever notice those words that are recorded about David when he was at the threshing floor of Araunah? You remember there had been a plague in the land, and many people had died because of David's sin of numbering the people. And Araunah wanted to give the oxen, the threshing instruments and so on. David was going to make a sacrifice to the Lord. And because he was the king, Araunah wanted to give all of those items freely to the king. But this is what David said: "He wouldn't sacrifice unto the Lord that which doth cost me nothing." It's not a challenge, brethren and sisters. Sometimes, if we're honest, that's all we ever give to God. We give the things that cost us nothing. We don't really miss it, the bit that we give. How different from those that we just mentioned, gave beyond their power. Do you remember the widow? The Saviour stood over against the treasury. And remember, he's the only one that has the right to do that. He's the only one that has the right to watch and to look and to see what you give. Our responsibility is to set the teaching of the Scriptures before you. And after that, men and women, it's a responsibility between you and God. One day you will be called to account for your stewardship. That doesn't just count or include money. It includes every aspect of your life, but certainly your giving, the handling of your finances, will be a major part of it. But he stood over against the treasury, and he watched that widow casting in her two mites. Not much in the eyes of men or in the eyes of the world, but you remember how the Saviour described it. She cast in all her living. Do you know really what that means, men and women? You think of your salary today. You think of your income for the past week. And if your giving is going to equate today to the giving of that poor widow, your entire salary would have went on the offering plate today. It's not a challenge. It was just two mites. But it was her entire income. It was all her living for that particular time. And that's what she cast into the treasury of the house of God. You know, the test, men and women, the test of her giving, is not how much you give, but the test really is how much you have left after you've given. And that dear woman cast in all her living to the work of God. And I want to urge you, men and women, as we think of giving abundantly, I want to urge you to do the same. You give abundantly to this church. You give abundantly to the cause of the building work of this church. I want to emphasize, we have said it before, and it's right to say it again, the very fact that so much work has been done in these last 3 to 4 years already, and that so much work has been done without this church having to borrow, to go into debt. Remember that some quarter of a million has been spent on this building, or thereabouts. Maybe some 30,000 or thereabouts in some of the work currently going on outside. When it gets into those couple of bits of tarmac and so on, that'll exceed the 30,000 too. But the very fact that all of that work has been able to be done, men and women, without any debt, is a testimony to the generosity, the liberality, the abundant giving of this congregation. I commend you for that. On behalf of the church committee, we take the opportunity to thank you sincerely, publicly, for all the giving that has been done. And I pray you'll take on your heart these examples, the challenge even of what the Scriptures set before us today. What I'm going to do, men and women, that's only the second point of the sermon. There's three more, at least, to come. I'm going to tell you a story. It's the story that I had at the end of this point, and I'll finish with that story this morning. And God willing, next Lord's Day, we'll come back. And maybe then we'll get through the rest of the sermon. But I have told some of you this story. I've printed it and given it out to some. If you'd like a copy of it for yourself, you let me know. But I'll tell you the story as I finish this morning. I have mentioned to you that great First Baptist Church in Dallas, in Texas. 2 years ago, I think it was, they finished on Easter Sunday morning. They opened their newly renovated facilities, and they had built a new auditorium for worship and so on. It was said it was the biggest building project ever undertaken by a Protestant church. $130 million is what they spent on the building program at that time. A challenge about that is that all of that money was pledged by the congregation even before they started the work. But that's what the Americans do. They put a big thing at the front of the church. It's like a post box. They have a special night, a stewardship night, a pledge night. The congregation gathers, and the people all file up past this box, and they drop in a specially prepared envelope and leaflet, and on that you pledge how much you're going to give over the next few years to the building project of the church. And the whole $130 million was pledged before they even began. But way back, the current pastor there is Dr. Robert Jeffress. If you get a chance to see him on the God Channel, or to see him even, his great strength is when he's interviewed by Fox News and some of those news channels. They made a great stand against sodomy and the same-sex marriage. And one of the results of that was, some of the young people will be familiar with Tim Tebow, an American football player brought up by missionary parents. He's a Christian himself. He's the young fellow that had John 3:16 on his hand that everybody could see, and everybody knew he was a believer. But because of the stand that the First Baptist Church in Dallas took against sodomy, the pressure was applied to Tim Tebow. He was to testify at their church. And the media made such a sing-song about it that he actually withdrew. They pressurized him, saying, you wouldn't want to be identified with a church like that that comes out against the sodomites. So it gives you some idea of the church and of the stand that Dr. Jeffress has taken. One of his predecessors was W.A. Criswell. W.A. Criswell was especially known for preaching right through the Bible. 16 years it took him. Started in Genesis, and he preached right through to the book of Revelation. And they marked it every so often. They marked when he got to the end of the Pentateuch and things of that nature. There was special presentations made to the pastor. And people would have said, you know, I joined the church in the book of Deuteronomy, and I joined the church in the book of Nehemiah. And that was a great highlight for people to remember that. But what I want to emphasize is, in Dr. Criswell's time, they were involved in a building project way back in the 1950s. And in that building project, during the building project, there was a property, it was a church property, across the street for them that came up for sale. The church was already heavily in debt. Dr. Criswell was concerned, if we don't buy this property across the street, some business will buy it and it will be lost to us as a church forever. And he brought it to the deacons, and they thought, we can't go any further. We've already borrowed as much as we dare. And he was a wee bit disappointed about that. But somebody said to him a short time after, Dr. Criswell, did you ever think about telling the Lord about that or praying about it? And you know, that was something he had to stand rebuked. So he brought the matter to the Lord in prayer, and he prayed about this bit of ground across the street. And one day he got a phone call from a lady. She was the wife of a very famous army general, army officer, Minnie Slaughterville, quite an unusual name. They were very wealthy people. She said to him, I hear you're on your face praying. What are you praying about? She was quite candid. That was just exactly how she said, I hear you're on your face praying about something. What are you praying about? So he told her all about this property. And she asked him, how much is the property worth? He said the asking price is $260,000. That's a way back, some 60 years ago, or thereabouts. Still a lot of money. She says, that's all right. I'll pay for that. I'll write that check. So she did. And whenever they were making arrangements for the check to be handed over and so on, she said to him, I forgot to ask you, what were you intending to do with that bit of property when you buy it? So he told her. He said, we're a wee bit pushed, downtown church. Parking's a wee bit difficult. We'd like to build a multi-story car park on that bit of ground for the congregation as they gather. They still have a multi-story car park. They actually own 12 blocks in downtown Dallas. The church property is a multi-million pound property because of its location. Many times they've been urged to sell the property to get the money and move out to the suburbs. But every time the answer has been no. The witness of this church needs to be in the city. The devil has all his strongholds in the city. And this is where we need to make a witness for God. But he told her, I want to build a multi-story car park. I want to put on the top of it some facilities for the young people, some recreation facilities and so on. She said, how much will that cost? He says, I don't know, but I could soon find out. So he spoke to the architect and he came back. And he said to Mrs. Slaughterville, the architect tells me it'll cost $1.5 million. The way he said it, $1,500,000. I suppose that's the American way. And she thought for a moment, she says, that's all right, I'll pay for that as well. Way back in the 1950s. In fact, the total amount of money she gave to the church at that time was $1,755,000. And they bought the property, and they did everything with it that Dr. Criswell envisaged. And they even called the building after, it was known as the Veal Building, for many, many years. You take the time to go on the internet and take a wee look at that. They demolished some of their very old buildings as part of that current building program. You can actually see the implosion. The minister and the chairman of the building committee and the mayor of Dallas, who's a member of the congregation, they stood around a big red button, and you see them push the button, and in the background you can see the buildings all implode and the dust cloud go up and so on. It's quite a sight to see. But that dear lady, men and women, that dear lady gave $1,755,000 to the support of a building program of the First Baptist Church of Dallas way back then, and help that work on. And I want you to take that on your heart today, brethren and sisters. Examples of those that gave abundantly to the cause of God. I'll finish with this thought, brethren and sisters. Giving is a means of service. I'd like you to understand that. Some people in the congregation, you could never be a preacher. You could never even be a children's worker. You couldn't stand before the boys and girls and take any part in the meeting. There's none of those aspects of the work that you could be involved in. But I want you to see that giving to God is a means of service. And that's what our text tells us. Who's willing to consecrate his service this day? And the appeal is an appeal for money. So David's showing that giving financial support is a means of serving God. We often emphasize it, and I stress it to you again this morning. We cannot serve God and mammon. We cannot serve two masters. But remember that you can serve God with your mammon. You can serve God with the money that he has given you, the money that he has blessed you with. And remember, men and women, that's one of the reasons why God gave you the money in the first place, so that you could use it in his work and in his service. I mentioned that dear lady, Mrs. Slaughterville. Did you ever notice in the New Testament three women are mentioned? Their names are put together. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Susanna. And you know what it says about those three women in that place? Which ministered unto him of their substance. Three women with a wee bit of wealth, with a wee bit of money. I read those verses this week. I thought that sounds very good. I'll have to slip that in Sunday morning. They ministered unto him of their substance. And you can do the same. There's a work for you to do. There's a service for you to be involved in. You can minister unto him of your substance as well. Who then is willing to consecrate a service this day to the Lord?